When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
They are Sports Illustrated.
It's amazing.
This incredible body of work.
I really appreciate the integrity.
Everything you do is well done.
You guys do a great job.
We love it. What can we say?
He's Chris Mannix.
He's employed by Sports Illustrated.
The announcer's got it in for me.
There you go.
This is the Crossover NBA Podcast.
If you have a problem with it, build a team that can beat them.
Hosted by the one and only.
Oh, thank God.
Thank God.
Chris Mannix.
All right, joining me now on the podcast, the pride of New Jersey, and now the Lakers head coach, Frank Vogel. What's up, Frank?
Chris, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great, man. Is it still surreal to you, like, Lakers head coach, after your entire journey, which I want to get into a little bit, like, but Lakers head coach at this point of your career, how does that feel to you right now?
Well, looking to see how our roster has shaped up, it feels pretty good. We've got a heck of a basketball team, and you know, that's the first thing. But you know, obviously, the Lakers are an iconic brand, a team that we all grew up watching, you know, be on top of the world in the 80s and 90s and 2000s, and you know, it's the center of the universe for the NBA. Mm-hmm. So it's quite an honor to be here, and I'm excited about what we can be.
It's kind of, I mean, in all things, timing is everything. And I've known you going back to the days of the Celtics video coordinator early on in the Rick Pitino years. But what was it, 10 years ago when you were on the verge of going back to college, weren't you? I mean, how close were you to rejoining the college ranks?
Yes, I had an offer. So I guess this was probably in 06 or somewhere around there. And Rick Pitino had his lead assistant, Kevin Willard, take a job with the University of Delaware. They offered him the job. Rick called me and wanted me to come and replace him, and I was set to do so. And, you know, I guess Delaware rescinded their offer once it was brought to the Board of Trustees and, you know, basically pulled out. And Kevin went back to Louisville. I did not go to Louisville. And then a year later, or maybe even that same summer, Jim O'Brien takes a job with the Indiana Pacers and brings me there as an assistant coach. And a few years later, I end up being the head coach there.
When you were kind of in that basketball wilderness of uncertainty there, did you want to stay in the pros? Was the college game something that appealed to you as, like, all right, look, I started there, maybe I'll go back there and make that my path?
Well, I always loved the college game. And, you know, obviously I've always loved Coach Pitino and owe him my whole career for given me an opportunity at a young age. It would have been an honor to go back and work with him. But I don't love the college game as much as I love the NBA game. Mm-hmm. You know, this is really where my passion has been. And, you know, it's something that I feel like Charles Barkley has said this many times throughout his career. He's never worked a day in his life. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel that way with the NBA. I love what I do. I love the relationships you build. I love grinding the film and putting together plans for your team and preparing for games and analyzing, you know, the post-game work. Everything that goes into my job, I really thoroughly enjoy and genuinely enjoy. So I definitely am glad that I stayed at this level. But, you know, I would have loved the college level too.
You began, as I said, your career in the NBA as a video coordinator. And video coordinators always tell me that their job is as difficult as the coach or assistant coach that they work for. What was being Rick Pitino's video coordinator like?
Well, again, I love breaking down tape and I love watching basketball.
So you probably had plenty of opportunity to
However,
do that.
We worked nonstop pretty much 24 hours a day and until you fell asleep. And when you woke up, you started back up again. And, you know, it was a tireless job. But look, I transferred down specifically to work for Rick because of that identity that he had. You know, I was playing Division III basketball and, you know, the commitment, at least at the Division III school that I was at, was more along the lines of let's have a positive experience than it was to compete and win at a high level. And, you know, there was a summer where, a winter where my coach gave our team off 3.5 weeks over Christmas break during the season. And I was a little surprised by that and wanted to be working and getting better with our team. And I go home for Christmas break and I find out Rick's doing double sessions on Christmas Day. And I decided at that point that that's how hard I want to work. That's the guy that I want to be around. And I was fortunately able to, connect with him and get a position on his staff, learn from him. And then came those years as the video coordinator where I got to work that hard and not have a life for a few years. So, but what a great experience. I owe it all to Coach Pitino and Coach O'Brien, who was with him at the time. And, fortunate to be where I'm at.
You mentioned Jim O'Brien and Rick Pitino gave you your kind of first break, but your growth as an NBA coach came under Jim O'Brien. I mean, when did that relationship really kind of coalesce as you got into the coaching ranks?
Well, right away, in my time that I transferred down to Kentucky, I had not really gotten in front of Rick. I was trying to work with the equipment manager to get a position as a student manager. And Jim O'Brien was the one that I went to sort of offer my services in the video room or to the coaching staff, to just tell them I can help them. I can be a great asset. And, he agreed with me and talked to Rick and convinced Rick to give me an opportunity. So, I really owe it to him and, helping create that opportunity. The combination of Rick inspiring me to get into this field and to work this hard, Jim O'Brien, helping me get those opportunities. And then once it all shaped up, I really was connected at the hip with Jim O'Brien more than I was with Rick Pitino. Obviously, Rick's running the team and all that stuff, and Jim is doing all the grunt work, and I was with him, basically inseparable all my time in Kentucky, and then that continued up with the Boston Celtics.
What kind of calls do you get? Is it like middle of the night, I need, footage of guys running pick and roll? I mean, tell me about some of the calls you might get from a Jim O'Brien as they're trying to prepare for a game.
Yeah, I mean, it was, typically if it was the middle of the night, they would try to respect that, but there was an element of okay, we got done our game tonight, the game's over at 11 o'clock or something like that, the team we were playing tomorrow played tonight also, and I want that game broken down 17 different ways, and I want these 17 edits done from our game, and that was basically they're handing you 6 to 8 hours of work to be done by 6 a.m. the next morning, which means no sleep. And that's all good. And we loved it. Like we just enjoy, like, okay, let's go, man. It's time to grind, and we're gonna play our part, play our role in getting the next W. Mm-hmm. So something I really enjoyed. It was it was very difficult, but definitely something I enjoyed.
Did you ever, I never asked it before, but did you ever approach Jim O'Brien when you were head coach either in Orlando in LA about him working for you?
In Los Angeles?
No, yeah, either in Orlando or here in LA. Yeah.
In both, actually.
You did?
Yes, I did. And, we were close to doing something with him in Orlando in a consulting role. At the time, he did not want to move his family full time. So he was leaning more towards something in a consulting role. And while we were talking about that, Brett Brown offered him to be the lead assistant. Mm-hmm. I believe at the time, Mike D'Antoni has left his staff, so he had an opening. And, for Jim, he was able to be back on the bench without having to leave because he was living in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. So he stayed there. And then, of course, when, the Lakers job came open, it was something that we considered very heavily as well. But he's got a great situation in Philadelphia, knew he was happy there, and he ended up staying there. Mm-hmm.
Could you ever, call him in the middle of the night and say, I need you to do this for me? Like, would it be like the, I'm now in charge, you do what I say?
It wouldn't necessarily be like that. It would still be, I think, in a advisory type of role. Mm-hmm. Even though he would be doing the work, he enjoys the work as much as I do, and mm-hmm. That's why we clicked at many, many years ago. But I would be able to call, I am able to call and do call him you know, anytime I want, even if it needed to be all hours of the night, to seek advice, you know, and get and counsel on, you know, what's happening with my life, with my career. Just recently talked to him about finances and, you know, all those types of things. So we have that type of relationship. We're family, and, you know, he means a lot to me.
You're the end in Indiana, when you got let go there, you were still very much a commodity amongst NBA executives. I mean, you did a tremendous job with the Pacers there. Everybody in the league knew it. When it ended in Orlando, did you feel any different after that, because it was a shorter term? It obviously didn't end with the type of playoff success that you had in Indiana. How were you feeling kind of about what your future might look like? Was it different than how you felt after it ended in Indiana?
Yes, it was actually wildly different. You know, when you get done in Indiana, you're hot. You're a hot commodity. You've had great success. You know, things have been, even the year I was let go, we had a real good season. The year prior, when Paul George was out for the year with a leg injury, we tied for the eighth spot and didn't ultimately make the playoffs. But we're still coming off 2 years after coming off two great years prior to that. So, you know, the interest was a lot higher than after the Orlando situation, which, you know, the win-loss record did not was not a great one, quite frankly, in either of the two seasons. But, you know, we did it was more of a developmental type of situation. The first year, we had a lot of young guys and pieces that, you know, the primary focus of that team was to get the young guys better. And I feel like we did a good job with that. And then the second year, we were decimated by injuries. So, you know, we weren't coming off the type of success. I wasn't coming off the type of success I had in Indiana. So I did feel around the league that, you know, the interest wasn't quite as strong, but there was definitely still interest. And, you know, there was definitely still respect, you know, for what I brought to the table. And, you know, fortunately, I was able to end up with the best job in the NBA here in Los Angeles.
When you finish that first year in Orlando, your boss gets fired, and that changes the calculus significantly. How much did that change things for you there, now working for people that didn't hire you in that spot?
It was difficult, and you know, in fairness to Jeff and John, you know, they worked hard to, you know, give me opportunities to prove myself and you know, make the best of the situation. We, you know, their way blended with my way, and we really got on the same page. But like I said, we ended up being decimated by injuries that year. And, you know, like most front offices do when they take over a job, they're ultimately going to, you know, make their own decision on the coach, unless something extraordinary happens, you know, with the coach that is in place. You know, I was not afforded that luxury due to the injuries. So you just respect their shoes and the seat that they're filling. You know, understand that that's something that, you know, I probably would be considering doing as well. And, you know, the relationship is still really strong with those guys. So that's just part of this business.
Does your confidence as a coach wane at all after a stretch like that? I mean, I would imagine after Indiana, you're feeling pretty good because of everything that you accomplished there. But when it's a tough two seasons there, does any doubt creep into your mind about the job you've done?
Well, I don't know if, you know, I would say there's any doubting of myself. It does take its toll on you. We are human. And when you know, at the end of the day, and you're not having success, you know, as a coach, you like to feel like you could take any group and make them play hard, play together, share the basketball, work on a defensive end, and win. You know what I mean? But the chips don't always align that way. You're not always going to have success. But some of the best coaches in the world, you know, have had situations where the stars didn't align and, you know, things didn't come together. And you just have to, you know, keep that in perspective, draw a lot of confidence that, you know, your experiences and your successes, you know, can help you with your next opportunity. And that's what I feel about this situation with the Lakers. You know, I feel, you know, that each opportunity has been a learning experience for me and, you know, will help me grow and be a better coach here in LA.
Before this opportunity came along, did you think you might have to go back to the assistant ranks? Was it, you know, were you thinking like that you might have to really earn your way back into that top spot?
Well, I knew there was a possibility for that. You know, that's just the way the coaching cycle works. You know, I was hoping that I would, you know, get some recognition that there were some adverse circumstances in Orlando with the new front office coming in and whatnot, and you know, people would still carry the respect they had for the job I did in Indiana, and that I would earn a head coaching job. And you know, that's kind of how I approached the summer. But I did want to get back to work. I had a great sabbatical year, both with my family and visiting with teams and learning the game from a different perspective. But I definitely was intent on working, and I did have some several assistant coaching offers that I could have acted on had this not played out the way it did.
Mm. Yeah, you grew a beard in that sabbatical year.
I grew the beard my last year in Orlando. Yeah,
and I just saw you during the sabbatical in Boston with a beard.
Like yeah, I may have had it then. I forget at what point I decided to go away from it. But at the end of the day, I lost a lot of games with the beard, and I won a lot of games without the beard. So the beard's gone.
So it's like
it's a distant memory.
The anti-Harden beard is what it is.
Just yes.
Unsuccessful with the beard. Let's have somebody out there find your record with beard and without. I bet somebody could put it together. So just tell me about how the Lakers came together, because it seemed like you were looked at as an assistant coach in the first round of discussions, and then you know, when things turned around, they looked to you immediately as the head coach candidate. How did this all, what was the timeline for all of it? How did it all play out?
Well, the Lakers were intent on not only hiring a great head coach, but putting together a great coaching staff. And, you know, when they were interviewing Monty and Ty Lue, which was well publicized, they did talk to those guys about some assistant coaches that they wanted to have in the mix as well. And my name was one of them. So I had been approached by Ty about joining his staff in a lead assistant role, and it was something I was very interested in. I long felt like last year was an aberration for LeBron James and the Lakers, that I thought this was going to be an incredible bounce back year for him and for the team, and was eager to be a part of it, even if it was going to be in an assistant role. And when negotiations broke down with Ty, you know, the opportunity presented itself for me to interview for the head spot. Mm-hmm. And just did the best I can to, you know, with the interview and creating a vision of what I think we could be. And you know, fortunate for me, I ended up being you know, the lead candidate to get the head coaching job.
It was obviously successful how you interviewed and what you said there, but what was your vision that you pitched to the Lakers in that moment?
Well, I think, you know, the style of play is an important piece of this. I actually did not disagree with a lot of the things that that Luke Walton did stylistically in terms of playing with pace, you know, really attacking the basket and being one of the leading free throw shooting teams, you know, and they worked hard on the defensive end, you know. But to me, it was about putting LeBron James in positions to try to play with space. The way Giannis Antetokounmpo did, with Brooke Lopez being added as a three-point shooter, with you know, what Kawhi Leonard was able to have in Toronto with Marcus Gasol and Serge Ibaka at the center position, but to really go with more of a five-out type of look around LeBron James, adding way more shooters than they had last year, or you know, just making sure we are improving the shooters that we had. And, you know, I feel like, you know, that's the best environment for the best player in the world to play in. And I felt like it's something that we could create. And, you know, I just sold them on what we were able to do on the defensive end. And, you know, the commitment that I've always had in terms of preparing for opponents and making sure that, you know, we're one of the smartest, most prepared teams in the league. And, I do have a track record for that. Made sure I presented that to them, and that's part of the vision of what I created.
You coached against LeBron James with Indiana and did as well as anyone did in pushing them in back-to-back conference finals. Did that experience in any way, or does it in any way, help you prepare you to coach LeBron James?
Well, it helps me want LeBron James on my team. It definitely helps that. Yeah, I think it does. I mean, just a familiarity. You know what I mean? Obviously, when you're obsessed with beating a team the way we were, with beating the Miami Heat, you know every in and out what has worked, what has not worked with LeBron James, and you know, every way you can try to attack him. So, you know, I think that will benefit me as I try to put him in position to succeed here in LA. And you know, we're going to rely on those experiences. Mm.
To have to succeed at a job like this, you have to have the buy-in from everyone. But most notably, you do have to have the buy-in from the best player. Were you wondering early on if you had that? What was your early conversation with LeBron like about just making sure that you two were on the same page?
Yeah, well, you know, I don't want to get too much in detail about our private conversations, but I did feel support right from the start from LeBron. He's always shown me a great deal of respect dating back to our battles when I was in Indiana and competing with the Heat in the conference finals and coaching him in the All-Star game. You know, he's always shown me a great deal of respect. So, you know, I felt like, you know, there would be a lot of support, and there was immediately. And, you know, that's continued, you know, on through up to this point. Mm. And, you know, hopefully we can work together to build something special.
Do you see different, I mean, at his age, and he's still a tremendous player, of course, but do you have to do different things with him to make sure he's able to sustain all that he's doing at this stage of his career?
Well, we'll see. You know, I'm going to sort of feel that out as the season plays out. You know, obviously the medical team has more of an impact on that in terms of, you know, what load management is going to look like. Is it going to be minutes per game? Is it going to be games off?
When did load management find its way into the NBA lexicon?
That's a good question. I first heard it last year. But, you know, obviously the last 4 or 5 years, teams have been resting guys a little bit more and more.
But you never used it.
Today might have been the first day I publicly used the word. Yes, that's for sure. But we've talked about it internally. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously, Kawhi Leonard was fresh in the playoffs last year, and they won a championship as a result. So, you know, I think that's the, you know, the example that's most in front of all of us. But, you know, it is, you know, there is something to be said for just being smart about, you know, how much you're putting on your players throughout the course of an 82-game season.
You think Kawhi set a standard there in how the Raptors handled him in terms of how your team and other teams might treat their star players moving forward?
I think they did a great job, and I think he should definitely play even less games this year, you know, and maybe under half, you know, maybe only 20 games or so. I think that'd be great for the Lakers. And
20.
The more you can be out, that's just fine with us.
You know, Doc, I mean, you'll just walk right. It's your old pal of Doc. You know, you can walk across the hall.
Yeah, no, obviously joking. You know, I think teams will follow that model because of the success that they had last year. I'm sure teams will overdo it. Mm-hmm. You know, and you know, that's the risk that you know, I think that is in play. You just got to make sure you're being smart with your own players. You know what I mean? It is a copycat league, and I understand, you know, the desire to do things that have worked for others, but you know, you have to do what's best for your group and your players. Mm-hmm. So that's what it comes down to.
You mentioned that, you know, your name came up in the mix as an assistant coach for Ty or Monty at that point. Jason Kidd's name was in the circulation as an assistant coach for whoever got that Laker job. And, of course, you being there, everybody kind of looks at that spot and says, well, Jason Kidd wants to be a head coach once again, his relationship with LeBron James. How comfortable are you with Jason as your assistant coach?
I've gotten really comfortable with Jason, and you know what I would say is every assistant coach in the NBA wants to be a head coach. Mm-hmm. You know, Jason's no different in that regard, and you know,
I don't think Jim O'Brien could do it again. I don't think Jim wants to.
Oh, he would do it, and he could
do it. He seemed like he had enough of it at the
very end. He could definitely be a head coach again if he were able to get another opportunity. I got real comfortable with Jason. You know, when I was, it was brought to my attention that they had an interest in bringing him on as an assistant. And, you know, I just wanted to make sure that I interviewed him, went through the proper process. We had a great talk, you know, and a great interview. And, you know, he's in a terrific place. The thing about Jason that, you know, kept me to have an open mind immediately is that, you know, the lead assistant role on my staff, I've always tried to fill with a former player, former respected player that has coaching experience, you know, dating back to Brian Shaw first initially, and then on to Brian, then on to Nate McMillan, and then Corliss Williamson on my coaching staff in Orlando. You know, those guys to me have always been the right complement to me, who have, you know, who has a strong background in terms of preparation and doing the video work and whatnot, but hadn't played in the NBA. So I felt like, you know, those types of guys are perfect complements to me. And, you know, Jason may be the best of the bunch. Mm. You know, a Hall of Fame player. You know, really just a fierce, fierce competitor. Someone that can really bring teeth to my message with our team. And, you know, so I saw a great potential in, you know, Jason potentially being on my staff. And, you know, when I interviewed him and we had a great talk, it became very clear that we were aligned in what we could accomplish as a tandem. And, you know, so we decided to go with it, and we've hit the ground running. You know, we're off to a great start. We've talked at length about, you know, all the decisions that go into, you know, managing a team, you know, leading right up into the point where our roster is built now. And, you know, we're formulating a plan of how we're going to play. So, you know, it's off to a great start, and I'm looking forward to what the next few years are going to look like with him.
How do you, as a coach, delegate responsibility to your assistant? Some coaches like to go coordinator. Here's offense, here's defense. Do you do the same, or do you things differently?
I do it based on what staff I have in place. You know, I try to get the best assistants, make sure they complement each other, and, you know, I try to just rely and draw on their skill sets. You know, I've had defensive coordinators in the past, offensive coordinators. You know, I like the idea that, you know, the three bench coaches all do everything, you know, and it's not just you have one role on one side of the floor, or, you know, every third game, you know, you have to be responsible. Everybody's got to be ready every night. Coach the game like you're a head coach. And, you know, what I will do from an offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator standpoint is I will divvy up the post game work typically to one, you know, to two coaches. Where basically I do most of my post game film work myself, based on, you know, myself watching the game, tagging clips, and then arranging it. So my video guys don't have it quite as hard as I had it back in the day, because I still do all my own edits for the most part. And you know, but I will make sure that, you know, there's a coach on the staff that has a defensive edit ready, and a coach on the staff that has an offensive edit ready, you know, in the event that I need that for the next morning's film.
So the first week in July, you effectively have three players on your roster at that point. I mean,
interesting times.
it's wild. But does that change how you, I mean, do you have to sit back and wait to see how the roster fills out, whether it's Kawhi or, you know, 10 other guys instead, before you can really dig into what you're going to try to do this season?
Absolutely. Your plan is always based on your personnel. Mm. You know, I mean, obviously you're always going to, you know, adhere to your principles of what you know wins basketball games, sharing the basketball, playing with pace, working on the defensive end, making sure we're doing the prep work, and our team is prepared. But the details of it change dramatically based on who you have on your squad. So, while I did have AD and LeBron and Kuz, for a stretch, that's all I had. So there was a big waiting game. Like, let's just see how the rest of the roster shapes up. And at that point, we'll formulate a plan. But, you know, the exciting thing about it is with those three guys, you know, they're obviously key core guys that, you know, the rest of the roster was constructed around them, you know, and we were able to sort of build it, you know, almost with a blank canvas, which is not usually the case in terms of building a team. It's usually what you have in place, add four or five guys and into the mix. So it was really interesting, you know, to go through that process with Rob Pelinka. And, you know, he was very, very collaborative and asking my opinions on guys. And, you know, we all worked together to come up with something that I think is going to be pretty extraordinary, you know, when it all comes together.
Having Anthony Davis is every coach's dream. I mean, a top five player in this league. You've seen how previous coaches have played him, how he's developed. How do you think he fits into what you're going to try to do next season?
He's a major focal point. Mm. He's one of the best players in the league. He'll be involved in every way that I can possibly use him. You know, offensively, he's got the ability to play the four, the five, stretch the floor from the three-point line, post up, be a lob threat rolling to the basket. He literally does it all. He'll be able to rebound and push on the break. You know, obviously going to be a major factor there. And then defensively, you know, he can do it all as well. He's got that athleticism to guard on the perimeter, an elite rim protector, a rebounder, just one of the best two-way players in the game. Usually when you talk about two-way players, you're talking about wings. Mm. You know, the Paul Georges and Kawhi Leonards of the world, Avery Bradley, for instance, you know, another guy we have on our squad. But you don't usually talk about guys like that at the power forward center position. And that's what we have in AD. Mm.
You have played kind of supersized in Indiana with Roy Hibbert and David West. At times played a little bit smaller in Orlando with the personnel you had here. And with the Lakers, you've got some big bodies there. They bring in DeMarcus Cousins. Anthony Davis is there. Do you see kind of a throwback to Indiana with how you try to play with your bigs, or is it something a little bit different?
It's different. You know, that approach was to try to be a power post offense and pound it inside, you know, slow down the game a little bit, you know, in the half court and, you know, play through the post. We'll do that more here than I've done the last few years and more than the rest of the league does because of guys like DeMarcus, AD, and LeBron. You know, those guys will get a lot of touches in there. But I do think the game has changed even with post offense, you know, where you know, we want to create a model of movement out of the post, you know, and the shot being sort of the third or fourth option once the ball goes inside that we want to, you know, generate movement and, you know, get guys cuts to the basket. I love what Golden State has done. As much as everyone talks about their pace and their break and their three-point shooting, you know, their cutting is what I think a lot of people would say was their best attribute, and a lot of that action happened when the ball was in the post. So we will take advantage of that with you know, with the guys that I mentioned, but it will be very different than the offensive approach, at least, that we had in Indiana.
There was a report that you plan to reimagine LeBron James as a point guard. How do you plan to use LeBron James?
Yeah, I'm not sure where that report came from. You know, LeBron's not going to be asked to do anything he hasn't done his whole career. You know, he'll be a primary ball handler. I've not made any decisions on starting lineups or exact roles or anything like that, as was reported. That stuff will all play itself out. I just know that, you know, LeBron has been at his best with the ball in his hands, and, you know, we're gonna make sure that environment that he's had the most success in his career is present here with this version of the Lakers.
Mm. Before I let you go, the coaching in Indiana, coaching in Orlando, a lot different than being in Los Angeles, and just the microscope that you're going to be under now. How do you prepare for that? Can you prepare for that?
You know, the best experience that I'm going to draw on for coaching this team and being LeBron's coach and being the Lakers coach, which are two different microscopes, right? The Lakers have always been on the forefront, and you know, anywhere LeBron has been in the forefront. And you know, the best experience I've had is being in the conference finals against LeBron. Because that's exactly what it was like then. Every word I said then was blasted, you know, all over the world, all over Twitter and SportsCenter and all those types of things. And, you know, that's going to be the case here with the Lakers. You know, it's not something that, you know, that I've not been a part of, you know, but it's just part of this job. And, you know, I understand it. You know, I don't think there's anything negative about it. I love that our team's going to be talked about, and I love that we're going to be one of the favorites in the league this year, you know, after having coached a number of, you know, little engine that coulds, you know, it's teams that were the overachieving types. I like being, you know, viewed as one of the favorites.
Knowing the personnel that you have now, do you feel like you have the personnel to play the style you want to play? Because you mentioned the shooting, and you bring in a Cousins who I guess can shoot, JaVale's back, Rondo not known necessarily as an elite three-point shooter, but do you feel like you have the personnel to play the way you want to play?
I do. Well, if you look at it currently, you know, Rondo and JaVale are the only two guys on the roster that are not known as three-point shooters, and Rondo's improved over the years. Mm-hmm. Like, to me, he's more than a capable three-point shooter. out there, and you know, he'll be asked to do that, to shoot the open shot like he has the last few years of his career. So I do believe we have that. And you know, if you're not going to be a three-point shooter, you've got to be elite in other areas. And obviously Rondo's the best passer in the game, you know, if not tied with LeBron. We maybe have the two best passers, and JaVale obviously is an elite lob threat. Mm-hmm. And you know, when you have a different elite skill set, you know, you can survive in that world. And you know, the rest of the team is going to be surrounded by capable three-point shooters. So I do think we're going to play with a level of space that, you know, we did not have last year under the Lakers team, and quite frankly, that I haven't had in my whole career in coaching in Indiana or in Orlando. So I'm really excited about that.
To win, you have to get kind of everybody to buy into the team concept. And I said this last year when it came to the Lakers, it's tough to do that when you have a lot of guys on 1 and 2 year deals, when you have some guys that might be mentioned in trades, and that kind of the trade part at least kind of played itself out last year with, you know, guys getting mentioned that Davis trade talks and falling apart at the end. I mean, is it a challenge is it going to be a challenge, I think, to get everybody to kind of buy in and say, we got to play as a team and it can't be, you know, about individuals and future contracts?
That's always a challenge in terms of coaching in this league. Whether you have a young up and coming team that has a development goal, or if you have a team that's pushing to get to the conference finals or to the finals, you know, it always has to be about individual agendas aside, and the recognition that team success will lead to all individual success and individual achievements and rewards, whether it's contracts or all-star games or all those types of things. The best way to achieve those things is through team success. So, you know, every team I've ever coached has that's been, you know, one of the things that you have to achieve or to conquer. And, you know, this situation will be no different. I actually think it'll be easier because we do have a legitimate shot to compete for the championship. And, you know, when you're that close, you know, those opportunities don't come along very often. You know, some guys may have that early in their career and not get to smell it again for another 5, 6, 7 years, if at all. You know, so I think the fact that we are one of the favorites, you know, will help us sort of get everybody aligned, you know, with the team concept.
Do you feel like you have the full-throated support of everybody in that front office? Because, I mean, you lose on like opening night, it's like Vogel watching some of the papers out there.
Yeah, I do. I really do. I've established a great relationship so far with Rob Pelinka, Kurt Rambis, Jeannie, the entire front office. You know, I think we've really hit the ground running. Obviously, this is a performance industry that we're in, especially in terms of coaching. You know, but you know, I feel like they've settled on the right guy. I feel like they're happy with their choice for coach. And, you know, the relationship in terms of us being aligned and working together to build this team up to this point couldn't be stronger. And I anticipate that will be the case going into the season.
Frank Vogel, appreciate it, man. Just like you dreamed on the delivering pizzas on the Jersey Shore, right?
Yeah, someday maybe I'll go coach the Lakers, right?
Someday, as you're sitting there on the beach staring up at the clouds.
The good old days.
Life was simpler back then, wasn't it?
It was simpler a month ago.
But better now.
Better now, for sure.
Appreciate it.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Get everything for your next project at Menards. Tackle tough jobs with Loctite Power Grab. This all-purpose construction adhesive is easy to use and bonds to a variety of materials. Plus, it's high strength, paintable, and reduces the need for clamping with zero-second instant grab. Save big money on Loctite Power Grab at Menards and check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money.